Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
After the whole lockdown situation, we're still in a COVID world, but, you know, as we kind of post-lockdown, what do you think is one of the habits that you've picked up? More.
More online shopping and therefore repurposing cardboard boxes. How about you?
Okay. Online shopping as well. And it's quite clear that, you know, when you're in lockdown or when the world was in lockdown, digital consumption really increased dramatically.
Definitely. This consumer behavior is likely to remain as well because more users are getting comfortable with accessing essentials through their mobile.
Indeed. And this has been a topic that's been around for a long time, only now it's being accelerated. And one of the things we saw increase were healthcare products and services. You know, you usually just go downstairs or perhaps to a pharmacy to get it. But now this particular area has seen the biggest growth in online sales during the pandemic.
Yeah, there have been major significant investments to capitalize on the trend, focusing on digital first delivery models. Platforms like Shopee and Lazada are being pivotal to their success.
Johnson & Johnson was the fifth best performing brand in the Southeast Asian region for 11.11 as well as 12.12 sales last year on Shopee.
So how is a company like Johnson & Johnson offering unique experiences and differentiating itself online?
Should be quite interesting. Dave Melo Villaroman, who is Associate Director, E-Commerce Southeast Asia Region, Johnson & Johnson Singapore, on the line. Dave, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Ali and Manisha. Thanks for having me.
Should be quite a fun topic. Of course, Johnson & Johnson, American multinational corporation founded back in 1886. You guys develop medical devices, pharmaceuticals, consumer packaged goods. Anything else I miss with regard to Johnson & Johnson?
I think you covered all of them. Yep. Consumer health. Yeah. Medical devices, pharmaceuticals, and of course the vaccines currently, right? Yep.
Yeah. Should be quite a big market presence in Singapore and Southeast Asia, considering baby products is so popular here.
Definitely. Baby products for sure. And also all the skin health products and of course, Listerine for oral hygiene. So these are three of our bigger ones.
Yeah. So actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because there are lots of products that are Johnson & Johnson products that people are just not aware of because you've got these really strong brands. I guess that means your remit, just the number of brands you cover, is quite large, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
So can you, perhaps reel off a couple of them just to get our audiences familiar with the kind of things we're talking about?
Sure. So for the main consumer health categories we have, the first foremost, I guess, we look at would be our mother and baby space. So currently, you know, the mother and baby category for e-commerce is our second largest franchise as we see more higher uptake from moms shopping online. And these are, of course, our brands like Johnson's Baby and Aveeno Baby. And the best sellers for e-commerce at this point would be Aveeno Baby Moisturizing Lotion, you know, our daily wash shampoos, and also Johnson's Baby when it comes to our Cotton and Touch and Milk and Rice bath and wash. And the other big categories, I guess, would be oral health, right, at this point, which is Listerine, and skin health when it comes to all our skincare products, including all the ranges from Aveeno and Neutrogena.
Dave, what happens at Johnson & Johnson, you know, when you have this international lockdown and people start to buy stuff more online? Is it giving you guys a little bit more trouble? Because in the past, it's so easy. You just make sure the supply chain works. I send it to all the reputable pharmacies. But now, you got to do the sales yourself in that sense.
Yeah. That's, you know, we really deeply understand the dynamic landscape of the region at Johnson & Johnson and even the evolving behaviors of the shoppers that we serve. So we've really put the shopper experience front and center and embarked on these new approaches to build innovative brand experiences and to also reach our consumers at the right touch points. So there are a few examples of this I can provide. You know, the partners that we work with mainly are still the two marketplaces, the main platforms like Lazada and Shopee, and also some quite unique to some of the countries like Tokopedia in Indonesia, right? Mm. And we mix that with leveraging awareness and engagement on social media outlets like Facebook as well. Of course, we still work closely with our physical retail partners. You know, we can't neglect the important role that brick-and-mortar outlets play, but we also have to be continuously agile and perceptive to, you know, the evolving shopper habits. And as you both mentioned when we opened this earlier, there's really a drastic shift of shopping online from home. So we're really cognizant and mindful of this.
Yeah, you know, I actually have a friend who is one of your brand ambassadors on Laz Live on Lazada.
Okay.
And
oh, yeah.
She was recounting to me an experience where she sort of, for a full hour, was live marketing on the Lazada platform at Johnson & Johnson products. But this is something that, I mean, is this something that's very pertinent to the Asian experience of e-commerce marketing?
Definitely, definitely. You know, new shopper experiences and how brands can create these new experiences that are differentiated from what we typically see offline, right? Typically, we're just used to seeing the pack on shelf or a bus stop ad or MRT ad or a billboard. But now you can imagine the kind of engagement that brands build one-on-one with each and every one of their shoppers that they can connect with on things like live stream and chatting on the store and all the content and communication that can be done on these e-commerce platforms. Very different today.
Dave, I want to use a balancing scale here and help me out. If I was to put the brick and mortar dependent sales and e-commerce sales for Johnson & Johnson, how would the balancing scale look like? Any chance you could share with us some percentages?
So at this point, we can say that for a few of the categories, we are definitely over indexed. When you look at the whole grocery category throughout Southeast Asia, that's around a $350 billion industry, right, across all the six main Southeast Asia countries. And e-commerce, at least the latest reading from, I think, Facebook and Bain, was around less than 1% of that, right? So here at Johnson & Johnson, well, we are above that number, right? We're over-indexed versus this category. But, of course, there's much more room to grow when we look at this region and these categories in this region, right? So I think where this is going is really a lot closer to what we see with the likes of China or even Korea, where some of these categories are already in high double-digit contributions, right, and contribute a significant amount of the total trade, not just for online, but including how this is shifting from all the offline purchases that are gravitating towards platforms like e-commerce platforms like Lazada and Shopee.
Okay, yeah. All right. So even though then you're over-indexed in some of these Southeast Asian markets, as you're pointing out, there are sort of rising above the challenges. So in the traditional model of, you know, fast-moving consumer goods, you would be fighting for shelf space, you know, and I know that there's a remarkable amount of work that goes into the psychology of what is the eye line of the customer, you know, where would they look, what color your packaging needs to be, all of that stuff. What are the kind of challenges and what are the things that you have to think about when it comes to e-commerce that are similar but obviously different?
Yeah, so there are two key points here I want to draw out to maintain, I guess, consistent consumer experiences. But, you know, I do want to emphasize and highlight that there are really new customer experiences that we can create as e-commerce evolves. So just these two points. So I guess one on brand content and engagement. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there's the ability for brands now to communicate with their consumers, not just through displays and supermarkets and all, but to create really immersive experiences that can only be executed in the digital space. So things like live streaming, live chat functions, and being able to engage the shopper more frequently compared to when they just visit physical supermarkets and see your product. I want to give one example of this. So we just had an Aveeno Singapore event at our office that was a public PR event around 2 weeks ago that also served the launch for our Aveeno Instagram filter, right? So this Instagram filter for Aveeno, the listeners here can check it out on our Aveeno Instagram page, also educates the shoppers on a product that uses oat as a key ingredient. And then this filter allows shoppers to take a selfie and share that with their friends. And soon in the next couple of weeks in May, we'll be launching a personalized online quiz as well that can recommend customers on the products that they can consider for their skin needs and buy that online as well. So that's one example for brand content engagement. The second one is on rapid on-demand fulfillment, right? So right now we're looking to constantly meet shoppers at all the touch points and addressing these new shopper journeys. And typically e-commerce delivery is between 1 to 3 days, but we're seeing the rise of more on-demand rapid fulfillment models. For example, like Foodpanda's PandaMart, or even the services that Grab provide, right, which can deliver within 20 to 30 minutes. And this allows the shoppers to overcome the barrier of waiting days for the essential items and could be particularly relevant for even our OTC medicine ranges, right, that are here in Singapore. So we work closely with PandaMart as well, and you can find our products on there. So the challenge really lies in, you know, how rapidly we probably have to pivot our business strategies and ways of working in a much quicker lead time to capture these trends and opportunities.
I want to pick up on your last point there, Dave, with regard to pivoting. Obviously, the pandemic and the shift in consumer behavior has caused a shift in how you sell your products. Then, you know, in terms of growth strategy at J&J, do you guys have sort of a forecast as to when e-commerce sales is going to outpace brick and mortar or even completely take over offline sales? Do you expect that to even happen?
So within this region, and I guess this applies globally as well, we do see that, you know, personally what I see is this will be a trend that will continue as an omni-channel shopper experience, right? Rather than one that is just purely digital or purely physical, right?
Okay.
So what I mean by that is, you know, while now there is a shift of this trend because of the pandemic and COVID for more digital adoption, brick and mortar stores won't be replaced entirely, right? And I think these shopper journeys will be really connected as omni-channel experiences as a whole. There will be certain categories that will have higher contributions, right? So like baby categories like diapers, infant formula, and also our baby personal care ranges, right? But when we look at some categories that may take a bit longer to adapt online, these will be highly dependent on some of the government regulation we see across the region and also in Singapore, right? That requires more time to pass. So what I mean by these are categories like prescription medicines, right? Healthcare products like our AccuView contact lenses, for example, and most of the over-the-counter self-care brands, right, like Nicorette for smoking cessation. So a lot of these are highly dependent on how the governments will progress. But what we can continue to be excited about is that the government regulation across the region is continuing to move swiftly on this. And in some countries, like in Singapore, the Philippines, and Indonesia, we're seeing more activity behind the availability of these OTC medicine brands. But it may take slightly longer compared to the other categories I mentioned.
Yeah, you know, that's been a real game changer for a lot of people with, you know, the medicine brands. I want to ask, though, Johnson & Johnson, it's a real household name, but how much of that gives you leverage in the digital space? Or does it not really matter in Asia because there's so much competition? There are so many other brands out here.
That's a great point, Manisha. So going back to building those innovative and immersive brand experiences, I think what would really differentiate brands, and you are really right to say that it's a highly competitive landscape, not only between, you know, the FMCG or consumer health giants, but also these new brands that are coming out in the region, right? And also ones that are being launched throughout the pandemic. But what we do is we really differentiate with these immersive brand experiences, which emphasize, you know, all the household brand names that we already have. But I'd like to give a few examples of these to just illustrate, right? So, for example, in Indonesia, we launched the ability for shoppers to personalize our Johnson's Baby Caught in Touch products in Tokopedia, right? So we launched a campaign there related to the baby's name, right? That believed every name is special and there's always a meaning behind your little baby's name. So we customized our Johnson's Baby bottles by allowing moms to imprint the names of the babies, effectively really marrying the commercial and product innovation side of this together. And we collaborated with several prominent influencers to create conversations around an emotional video about the meaning, story, and hope behind every baby's name. And we topped this off by having a Facebook chatbot that was used to automatically send these personalized videos to the moms within 24 hours, allowing them to save this video and also post it and share it on their social media accounts. That's one example. And just a second quick one here is in the Philippines, we also launched an official J&J chat and shop on Facebook. So this really allowed to bring our products closer to consumers, providing them easier access to essentials. And how this worked was this allowed shoppers to seamlessly chat with an automated robot on Facebook Messenger or a chatbot on Facebook Messenger to purchase all our brands directly across all the consumer health categories that we have. So really thinking about where to correctly meet our shoppers at the right touch points and also deliver these immersive brand experiences is what can really differentiate brands versus the competition.
Wow, that all sounds amazing, but it leaves me really curious about one thing, which is maybe slightly out of left field. Does that require a huge marketing budget? And how are your budgets for e-commerce different for those of your conventional marketing?
That's a great question. So when we look at the new types of marketing media that's available, right, to be able to drive new user acquisition and traffic on online e-commerce platforms and also the platforms that we're building, I think when we go back to the consumer journeys, because again, these are very different from your traditional shoppers, right, that are used to seeing an ad maybe out of home and then going to in-store. So what we see now is in the digital connected journeys, there are various touch points, whether that's on Facebook, on Google, on the platforms themselves, that we can really drive higher conversion depending on the content that we portray and show on these new kinds of mediums. And out of that, you know, I would say that over time, there are actually ways to optimize these budgets even versus what's spent online. Because if you look at the data and transparency throughout seeing this and reviewing this as a marketer, right, there's a lot more transparency with seeing the conversion rates, the click-through rates, and every single data point you can see in the shopper journey. So when we look at that relative to, I guess, the return on investment or return on ad spend, there are ways we can continue to optimize that even versus the offline channels, right, and track what the entire conversion journey throughout the whole funnel looks like versus what we typically couldn't see in offline shopper journeys. Yes.
Dave, I got a curious question to wrap things up. You know, when you have, and I'm hoping you can help me out with this, when you have a shift to focus more on e-commerce, when you have a consumer shift like this, what happens where logistics is concerned? Because I'm thinking, and purely because I'm not involved in it, I'm thinking that your quantities being shipped out will be more frequent but in less quantity, as opposed to I ship out in bulk to a brick and mortar store. What goes on behind the scenes where logistics is concerned? How big of an adjustment is this?
That's a great question. So we look at, there's definitely been tremendous volume spikes, right? Especially during the lockdowns last year. When we look at the different routes to market available for e-commerce, especially on the platforms like Lazada and Shopee, there are quite a few options that brands have for this, right? So some are either delivering this directly to the platform's warehouses and using their fulfillment models, right, to be able to fulfill directly to the consumers. And another option is to work with third-party enablers, right, or e-distributors that help manage this for the brands. And when we look at forecasting, taking a step back to your question in relation to this, if you can imagine the types of data we can look at and review for the course of the past few weeks, days, or months, that helps us a lot more actually be more accurate with the forecast for, you know, maybe campaigns or always on activations, but at the same time, looking at that relative to the bigger campaigns like Double 11, right? So we're always setting benchmarks when we look at month-on-month performance, and obviously the baseline for e-commerce is getting higher and higher every month as digital adoption gets more and more. And for the mega campaigns, we do compare that to the previous campaign that's finished. So for example, Lazada just had a 9th birthday campaign a few weeks ago, followed by Shopee's 4-4, right? There's a lot more of these mega, mega campaigns, but we're able to correlate the right benchmarks of volume demand based on these campaigns and based on when that baseline increases every week. And again, just going back to the principle of what's very different, you know, I guess with offline is the transparency of data that is available for brands to look at, review, draw insights from, and then take action accordingly.
Something to think about the next time you say, I want my product now. Dave Melo Villaroman, who is Associate Director E-Commerce Southeast Asia, Johnson & Johnson Singapore. Dave, I really appreciate your time this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.